This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, and here's what's coming up.
Hundreds of millions of people face hunger, and consumers are confronting a global cost of living crisis. And they will pay the price.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres on how poor countries are expected to suffer the most from Russia halting guaranteed safe passage of Ukrainian grains in the Black Sea. Also, Tunisia has overtaken Libya as the leading departure point for African migrants heading to Europe. And the U.S. says Britain's illegal migration bill is at odds with London's obligations under international law. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Russia on Monday ended the Black Sea Grain Initiative, which guaranteed the free flow of Ukrainian grain to the rest of the world. Poor nations already struggling with food insecurity are expected to be affected the worst. VOA's Veronica Balderas explains.
Ships transporting Ukrainian grains to food insecure countries will no longer be guaranteed a safe passage in the Black Sea. Russia halted the so-called Black Sea Grain Initiative after complaining about the effects of Western restrictions on Russian food and fertilizer products. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov.
As soon as the stipulated part of the Black Sea Agreement related to Russia is fulfilled, Russia will immediately return to the implementation of the deal.
Turkey and the United Nations brokered the deal last summer to ease the repercussions of Russia's war against Ukraine, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
This initiative has ensured the safe passage of over 32 million metric tons of food commodities from Ukrainian ports. Hundreds of millions of people face hunger, and consumers are confronting a global cost of living crisis. And they will pay the price.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken also decried Russia's decision, as he noted that food prices have already jumped.
We'll look at to see what else can be done to find other ways to get Ukrainian food products on the world market, including, again, moving as Ukraine's already been doing, moving things out through rail and by road. But in terms of the volumes necessary, it's really hard to replace what's now being lost as a result of Russia weaponizing food.
African countries already struggling with the effects of climate change will be particularly hurt by Russia's decision, said Kate Phillips Barrasso with a humanitarian organization, Mercy Corps.
It's not just grain that's not getting out of Ukraine, but it's also fertilizers, which are really essential and required for producing food on a mass scale.
As the threat of hunger rises, another group is calling on the United States to ramp up its support for ongoing humanitarian efforts. Bob Kitchen is with the International Rescue Committee.
The U.S. should get their checkbook out and make sure that they're saving lives through donating funds to these countries who need it the most.
Ukrainian officials told VOA that their exports will be badly affected by the Kremlin's decision, but that they will try to find other methods to distribute their products. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa says arresting Vladimir Putin would amount to a declaration of war on Russia. Ramaphosa's comments were in court papers released today as part of a case arguing that South Africa should arrest the Russian leader if he attends next month's BRICS summit. Putin has been invited to the Johannesburg summit of the leaders of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, the BRICS nations. However, he's the target of an international criminal court arrest warrant for alleged war crimes in Ukraine, and Pretoria is an ICC member, so it would be expected to arrest Putin. The opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, went to court to ensure the Kremlin leader is handed over to the ICC if he steps foot in the country. International and South African news organizations today reported that in a responding affidavit, Ramaphosa described the DA's case as irresponsible and said national security is at stake. Ramaphosa's filing says South Africa is seeking an exemption under ICC rules because the arrest could threaten the security, peace and order of the state. Signed in June and initially marked as confidential, Ramaphosa's affidavit was published today after the court ruled it be made public. Tunisia has overtaken Libya as the top departure point for African migrants heading to Europe, starting in Italy. Tunisia's leaders have recently signed a deal with the EU to work together to reduce migrant flows. But as Dale Gavlak reports, challenges persist.
Matt Herbert is a senior analyst with the Geneva-based Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime. He tells VOA there are several factors explaining why Tunisia is overtaking Libya as the main embarkation point to Italy. One is the rapid increase in magnitude in departures from Tunisia that greatly surpasses those from Libya, especially this year. Italian Interior Ministry figures show more than 15,500 people arrived on Italian shores from Tunisia from January until the end of March, in over 180 landings per day. Italian officials say it's a 920% increase compared to the 1,525 arrivals in the same period last year. As of last week, the Italian Interior Ministry recorded more than 75,000 migrants that had arrived by boat on Italian shores since the beginning of the year, compared to about 31,900 in the same period last year. Herbert says Tunisia's deeply troubled economy in the aftermath of the 2011 Arab Spring uprising, terror attacks affecting the Mediterranean country's prime income earner, tourism, and then COVID-19 are the main factors. He says worsening economic and political situations are hitting Tunisia's people, and adding to that, African migrants are coming to the country for work.
The continuing economic challenges have had a real impact on their bottom line. The money that they're able to earn has been drastically reduced, facing economic difficulties in staying in country, and so some are leveraging the money that they already have to leave. The dynamic of departures being very closely linked to rising xenophobia.
Herbert adds that a multi-year rise in irregular migration from Tunisia has seen a growth in human smuggling networks along the Tunisian coastline, providing more escape routes. At its nearest point, Tunisia lies approximately 130 kilometers from the Italian island of Lampedusa. On Sunday, the European Union committed financial assistance to Tunisia in exchange for its added efforts to combat human trafficking and strengthen its border controls. The EU has already offered Tunisia more than $1 billion in long-term aid. Tunisian analyst Tazneen Abderrahim, a migrant policy analyst with the Washington-based Middle East Institute, debunked the perception that North African countries are willing to do anything in exchange for money, saying there are mitigating factors.
Now there are concerns that Italy may be seeking to deport sub-Saharan nationals to Tunisia. The repatriations of Tunisian nationals is already happening, and Tunisia has very advanced cooperation with Italy in that sense. But the readmission of third country nationals is definitely something that Tunisians, both the government and the population, reject. There are very little incentives on the Tunisian side to engage in such form of cooperation.
Racial tensions and anti-migrant sentiment are growing in Tunisia following the death of a Tunisian man on July 3 in a fight between locals and migrants. Observers say Tunisia does not have a legal framework to welcome migrants. Del Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
The UN says Britain's illegal migration bill, aimed at stopping thousands of migrants from arriving in the country, is at odds with London's obligations under international law. The bill, which has been passed by Parliament and now awaits its signature into law by King Charles III, means migrants arriving by boat will be refused the right to apply for asylum. The French news agency AFP reports that UN refugee and human rights chiefs said today the bill is at variance with the country's obligations under international human rights and refugee law. They said it will have profound consequences for people who need protection. The UN Human Rights Chief, Volker Turk, and the UN Refugees Head, Filippo Grandi, said the bill bars people from presenting refugee protection claims, whatever their circumstances, and creates sweeping new detention powers with limited judicial oversight. They said the 1951 Refugee Convention explicitly recognizes that refugees may be compelled to enter a country of asylum unofficially. Chad consistently ranks among the bottom five countries in the UN's Human Development Index, with poor life expectancy, education, and living standards. In this report from N'Djamena, Chad, Henry Wilkins speaks to residents who struggle to imagine a decent future for their families and to experts about what can be done to kickstart development.
In Chad's capital, N'Djamena, Ola Suleiman sits by the side of the road breaking rocks to sell for use in construction. She says life for her and her family is grueling, but she sees no other way to make a living. She says it's very hard to live here with no money, adding that her children can't go to school to become well-educated, although she has learned to accept the situation because she doesn't have any other choice. Chad, along with its neighbours Niger and Central African Republic, consistently finds itself at the bottom of the United Nations Human Development Index. The HDI was created in 1990 as a measure of a country's prosperity. It takes into account factors such as life expectancy, education and per capita income. Suleiman is not alone. 6.5 million Chadians live below the poverty line, a number that rose by 38% between 2011 and 2019, according to the World Bank. Omar Bourid, a mother of four, lost her home to floods that devastated parts of Chad a year ago and now lives on a public soccer pitch in N'Djamena. She says that it's really difficult to find a good job and that everyone is suffering. Everyone here is having a hard time. While for decades, non-profits and development banks have been pouring money into projects to stimulate growth in countries like Chad, many in Central Africa question why there appears to be little progress. One economist says rising population is a major factor. Chad has a birth rate of 6.5 children per woman, compared to less than 2.0 in many developed countries. Kingsley Magalu is a Nigerian economist.
Uncontrolled population growth is a recipe for entrenching poverty cycles, and in fact creating more conflict in the future, because the competition for resources becomes stronger and more acute the more people you have.
In Central Africa, conflicts over resources are becoming more common, many experts say, which in turn leads to more development problems. Hans Freitas is the Niger country manager for the World Bank.
A lot of those resources, the little resources they have, they need to invest in their army and in their security forces. So there's a question of what comes first, right? So does the government need to invest more in education and then less in its own security?
He added that the development efforts have been successful in African countries, such as Ivory Coast, as has localized development in Niger's capital, Niamey. But the slow pace of development in Chad means people like Suleiman suffer. She says she feels she has no chance of prosperity. She says she feels sick, especially at night, and that she and the others who work breaking rocks are exhausted. The experts VOA spoke to agree that harnessing the political will and mobilising entire countries to break these cycles is essential to solving development woes. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, N'Djamena, Chad.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, head on over to voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Cameroon's military says it has arrested scores of rebels suspected in the shooting deaths of 10 civilians on Sunday in the northwest town of Bamenda. The military says separatists disguised themselves as government troops to try to frame them for the killings, which a rebel spokesperson denies. Rights groups have blamed both sides for atrocities during the six-year separatist conflict, as Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Bamenda, Cameroon.
Bamenda City Mayor Achambong Paul is among the civilians and local officials who visited Bamenda Regional Hospital Tuesday morning. Achambong says residents of the city are living in fear after Sunday's brutal killings.
Every human life has value. Every human being has a right to live. And nobody, for whatever reason, has a right to take away the life of an individual. We cannot live in a town where there is chaos, fear, and all the kinds of atrocities going on at the same time. We will never move forward with this attitude. No, we won't. People can go to work. Nothing works in this town because people are scared to be killed.
Hospital Director Sammy Dennis says at least 600 people have visited the hospital since Sunday's killings to find out if their family or friends are among the victims.
We received in total 12 victims of firearm injuries. Out of these 12, two survivors. One is in the intensive care, one took treatment and went home, and at the level of the mortuary, we have 10 corpses, amongst whom three are female and seven are males, ranging from 24 to 56 years.
Cameroon's military, in a July 17 statement, said about a dozen heavily armed fighters dressed in military gear similar to that of the Central African States military shot indiscriminately at civilians at Nacho Junction in Bamenda. The military says scores of suspects have been arrested in a crackdown operation less than 48 hours after the killings. Deben Chofor is the governor of the Northwest region. He says fighters want to create panic among civilians who collaborate with the military by reporting suspected separatists.
I would like, on behalf of the head of state, to assure the population that measures are being taken by security services to locate the author of that barbaric act and sanction them. I would like to strongly condemn those attacks by a terrorist group.
Separatists on social media, including Facebook and WhatsApp, denied responsibility for the killings. They say government troops were responsible, asserting that the military wants to give separatists a bad image to the international community. The Center for Human Rights and Democracy in Central Africa reports that Sunday's killing comes 2 days after Cameroon's military was said to have raided Awin Quarter, another neighborhood in Bamenda, and killed at least 5 people. Northwest Region Governor Chofor acknowledges that civilians were killed in Awin Quarter, but blames fighters for the killings. The Cameroon government says people wounded in both attacks are being treated free of charge in hospitals in Bamenda. Rights groups, including Human Rights Watch and the Center for Human Rights and Democracy, accuse both the military and rebels of abuses, including rape, torture, and killings. Cameroon's northwest and southwest regions have seen years of deadly battles between government troops and separatists fighting to carve out an English-speaking state from French-speaking majority Cameroon. The conflict has killed more than 6,000 people and displaced more than 760,000 others, according to the International Crisis Group. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Bamenda, Cameroon.
VOA's English to Africa service celebrates its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, plus 1202-258-3076. Tell us what your favorite program is, or let us know about a report we did that mattered to you. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa, or tell us what stories you think we should cover or how we can improve. That number, again, is plus 1-202-258-3076. Tell us your name and where you live, and you might hear your comments on our shows. And thanks for 60 years of support.
Sudan has been rocked by violence since April 15th, when tensions between the military and the paramilitary rapid support forces burst into open fighting. The conflict has killed more than 3,000 people, and uncounted Sudanese have fled to neighboring countries to escape that ongoing fighting. And among those people is a Sudanese journalist, Shakur Nyaketo. He fled his native country accompanied by his 7.5-month pregnant wife, hoping to find a haven for himself and his family. Nyaketo, alongside other Sudanese, walked for several days, covering hundreds of kilometers from the Sudanese capital Khartoum through the dangerous roads of Ethiopia. They finally made it to Nairobi, Kenya. His story is one of triumph and overcoming adversity. VOA's Paul Ndiho spoke to Shakur Nyaketo, who shared his ordeal.
What's going on in my country, Sudan, is actually very terrible and very bad right now. There is a very dangerous war going on in Sudan. It was in Khartoum, but now has spread in different states in the country and different regions. So there is a fighting between the rapid support forces and the Sudan National Army forces or National Armed Forces. A lot of people have lost their houses, you know, because of the fighting and the airstrike inside the city. The major effects is, you know, the impact of that war is in Khartoum, because it has started in Khartoum and the war is still going on in Khartoum, especially yesterday, until yesterday, last night and this morning. There is a very, much shooting inside the capital until now. So there is a very much humanitarian crisis going on in there.
What is it like leaving everything you've ever owned, you've ever known, to flee to a different country?
It's a very unfortunate feeling, and it was not very easy. I was very traumatized and felt alone, because as a journalist, I was dreaming to start my own media houses. And of course, last year, I managed to start my own company, register the company, build the website, and bring the equipment. I have prepared the studio production. I think, you know, what does it mean for somebody to start for 7 or 8 years saving just to start your own business as a young person? As I talk to you, I only moved, thank God, with my laptop. That's the precious thing I have, the laptop and the passport. There is nothing that can actually be, can get back after this war.
You left almost all your relatives, all your friends back there. Are they safe? Have you been able to talk to them?
I am able to talk to my friends. I talk to my family as well. We've lost some of relatives and also friends. But those who are alive, we are still in touch with them.
What can you tell us that happened to you? You had to leave with a pregnant wife. You had to walk to Ethiopia and maybe find your way to Kenya. How did you do it?
2 weeks after the war, intensive shooting in Khartoum, you know, a lot of houses nearby us were destroyed and shot, and many people are leaving. Because as a journalist, by that time, I was not able to go and report on the ground. I'm just seeing what's going on. For me, it was a choice whether I stay or look after my family. So I decided to leave the country with my wife. And then it was very difficult. When we started evacuation, she was 7 months pregnant. So it took us like maybe 10 days to cross the two borders and then come here.
And congratulations on your baby.
Hopefully that I will tell him that you will be the next president of Sudan I want him to be given a birth without tribe, without color, without support to any of those people. So I want him to be a Sudanese who will go back to the country in the name of the Sudan, and hopefully will be the president of the next country.
I can't wait to see that young man come to life. Once again, congratulations, and thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you very much, Paul.
That's VOA's Paul Ndiho speaking to Shakur Nyaketo, a Sudanese journalist now based in Nairobi, Kenya. And we too say congratulations to Shakur and his wife on their new baby boy. And that wraps it up for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yabro, and our engineer, Atreus Regis, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.